Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, welcome to the show. This is John.
Hello, everyone. Today we're here with Willa Goodfellow, and I would like her to go ahead and explain you guys her background and her story. So take it away, Willa.
Okay. Well, one of the ways that you and I have connected, John, is Colorado. I grew up in Loveland, Colorado. I was the oldest of six kids and lived with depression off and on probably since I was about four. Got through life with a little bit of therapy and a whole lot of sucking it up because that's how it worked in my family. I became an Episcopal priest. I had a long career doing that. And then in 2004, the depression was just biting my butt, and my doctor put me on Prozac. That started off a journey through six different antidepressants. Each one made me sicker and more suicidal than the one before. And my brain just slowly over a few years unraveled. So I went on disability. Mm-hmm. Then my life took a pivot. I started investigating what the heck had happened to my brain. And in that investigation, I discovered, no, actually, major depression is the wrong diagnosis. I have bipolar. So I continued that investigation. Since then, I've learned a lot about bipolar disorder, what is happening inside the brain. I'm a brain nerd. And I've worked on my recovery. Last summer, indeed my brain did recover. I've published a book, Prozac Monologues, A Voice from the Edge, that tells that story. And now I do speaking, writing, and advocacy for mental health issues. Found you on Twitter, found that recovery and this issue of taking responsibility for our own lives and our own health is an issue that we share. So here I am.
Well, I'm excited to have you here with us today. And you said that you wrote the Prozac monologues, right?
Correct.
And how long has it been out for?
It was published in August.
In August, okay. And if somebody wants to go take a look, you're on Amazon and all of the, are you on all the major platforms?
I'm on all of the platforms. I certainly encourage you to shop at your local bookstore. Or even ask the library to get it. I'd like this book to be in more libraries. The response that I've been getting, it just is really important to get it out there.
Yeah, no, I definitely understand because I know you and I, we hold, just from what I know about you so far, we hold sort of similar values in how we approach treating bipolar disorder. And like you, I'm a huge proponent about educating, taking responsibility, personal responsibility. And that's something I think a lot of people have an issue with, especially the past few years since I've been advocating on Twitter. I think a lot of people are confused about, well, I have this diagnosis, I have these meds, and now kind of where do I go from here? And one of the things that I've, I'm really a big supporter of is daily exercise. And I lift weights every day. The only time I take off is, you know, if I feel like my body needs to recoup, but it has been instrumental in, like you said, recovery and getting, you know, being able to move on and have a functional life. And so I kind of wanted to get, I wanted to get your perspective and what, with your journey, what you found with that, with exercise and so forth. Cause you said you're a brain nerd too, like me. So, I really want to hear your ideas.
Well, this for me, things started turning around. I discovered a psychologist in Australia, Sarah Russell, with lived experience as a person with bipolar. And a number of years ago, she wrote a book called A Lifelong Journey, Staying Well with Manic Depression, Bipolar Disorder. What she did for her PhD, I think, was interview people who have bipolar and are stable or are managing well with the condition. I, for myself, I say managing more or less. She just asked them, how are you doing it? And then there were certain themes that kept reemerging with each person. Lifestyle changes, education and self-awareness, support, and medication. And lifestyle changes were the most important. And I've discovered that myself. For me, the most important piece of that is to keep a routine. Now, Ellen Frank has a whole therapy around that called interpersonal social rhythms therapy. And the idea behind it is that we all have these internal clocks. Everybody has an internal clock that regulate all kinds of functions, energy levels, release of hormones, appetite, mood, temperature regulation, sleep. My wife and I never agree at the thermostat setting. And I'm aware of the fact that that's because my body is always fluctuating. I can be in a room and within an hour, put my sweater on and take it off three times.
I hear you.
Our clocks are wonky. If we have bipolar, that's one of the basic things that's going on is our inner clocks are wonky. So Frank's therapy is about setting and resetting the clock every day, having a routine. It doesn't mean you have to do the exact same thing at the exact same time every day, but particularly at the morning when things get going, and then in the evening. So the first 3 hours of my morning, of my day, and the last 3 hours of my day are pretty well regulated. And help me sleep. And actually, this last year with COVID restrictions, that's helped me keep my routine because I don't have those temptations to go out with my friends and eat a big meal late at night and then not be able to get to sleep and or plan a trip that gets me up at 4 o'clock in the morning to catch a plane. I'm those temptations to go off the ranch have gone away. That's for me the number one issue.
What sort of could you kind of touch on what you do for your own routine in the morning and night, just to kind of give everybody who's listening an idea of kind of what what a healthy morning and a healthy evening looks like?
Sure. I didn't know that this would ever happen earlier in my life when I had to always wake up with an alarm clock. But I don't have to wake up with an alarm clock anymore. And it turns out I get up sometime between 5 and 6. Mm-hmm. So I spend some quiet time by myself because my wife doesn't sleep as well and she tends to sleep in. I spend quiet time with myself and then start breakfast at 7. Breakfast and the first interaction, significant interaction with another human being, is the most significant of those timekeepers. And that happens almost invariably at 7:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have breakfast, we play some video games, we read the paper, and talk to each other until about 9. And then my workday begins. Mm-hmm. And there's more variation than in the rest of my day. Until I get to 6 o'clock. And whatever I've been doing at 6 o'clock, no more work. I try to stay off social media at that point. It's a challenge, but I don't want to get into anything on social media at 6 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And just kind of relax, maybe read, start dinner. 7 o'clock to 9 is dinner and TV. Okay. Now, an important piece of that, I had a psychiatrist who said, put on these amber glasses an hour before bedtime. And the amber glasses, which you can get at a drugstore, they're just any kind of amber glasses, amber colored glasses, cut out the blue light that comes from screens. Mm-hmm. When you have those on, your retinas are telling your brain it's dark. Mm-hmm. It's time to go to sleep. So before I discovered that, it would take me an hour and a half after I turned on the light for my brain to get the message that it was time to go to sleep. Now I give it that message an hour before I go to bed.
Oh, yeah.
So it's already, when I get to bed, it's already ready to let me sleep. Read a little bit, turn out the light, and this sounds really weird, but I have become one of those people who can fall asleep in 10 minutes.
That doesn't sound weird at all, actually.
Well, for me, it's weird. You know, my doc used to say, well, talk about your difficulty. Is it when you go to sleep? Is it in the middle of the night? Do you wake up early? And I said, yes, 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 and yes. And now the answers are no, no, and no.
Oh, that's awesome.
I fall asleep when I want to. If I wake up in the middle of the night, I fall back asleep. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I do have an occasional time when I'm working on something, I'm anxious about a presentation I'm going to give. I get over agitated about something in the news or something with my family, those, and I can't sleep. Those things do happen.
Yeah.
But it's not, those are the exceptions now.
Exceptions. How long did it take you to kind of go from all the yeses to the nos that you were talking about?
Yeah. Oh gosh, you know, when I was on antidepressants, I just could not take enough sleep medication. All of these things that were supposed to knock me out that I was taking at the highest dose just were totally ineffective. Mm-hmm. How long did it take? Probably from when I started on antidepressants. Well, I took antidepressants for about 2 years. Then I stopped. Then I was trying other things or for a while I was just trying to avoid being around psychiatrists because I didn't want to take something else that was going to make me sick. But when I got that cue about when the doc said wear amber glasses, probably within a month.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I had stabilized. Now at that point I was working every system.
Okay.
One of the disadvantages of having been misdiagnosed and taking antidepressants is that one of the consequences is that then the meds for bipolar don't work as well.
Okay.
Which is a real bite.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
the damage continues even after you stop taking them. So I really, really, really have to work my recovery tools, my lifestyle tools.
Okay.
Other things, diet, so that I'm feeding my brain cells rather than poisoning them. And of course, exercise. Exercise not only keeps the endorphins going, so it helps with mood. It also stimulates something called BDNF, which is a hormone that makes your brain produce more brain cells or more dendrites. It increases your brain mass.
Oh, okay.
And exercise stimulates that. Okay. So you're making your brain stronger as well as your body, as well as doing all of the stress relief stuff that exercise does.
Okay. Because you touched as well on diet, and that's huge for my daily process, my routine as well.
Right.
What, you know, you talked about it when you were talking about your routine in the morning, you know, your breakfast and at night. What do you try to, you know, have a certain amount of, you know, proteins, fats, carbs, or is it more like your types of food that you're eating? What do you use to make a decision about what to eat?
Right. Well, that also, I don't diet. First of all, let me say that. I don't diet.
Cool.
I follow a food plan.
Okay.
And all of those fad things that restrict one thing or overemphasize another, you know, those diet programs intended to help you lose weight are really intended to help a company make money. The American Diabetic Association, I'm not diabetic, but their approach is a balance. This much carb, this much dairy, this much fruit, this much veg, this much protein, this much fat. And you can eat whatever you want, fitting it into those categories. Now, the way we did it, we talked about bubbles. So we have to fill up 4 veg bubbles or 3 fruit bubbles or 5 fat bubbles. And so there are 7 protein bubbles, which is basically 7 ounces, the equivalent of 7 ounces of meat spread over the course of the day. Now that I'm older, my doc has recommended that I increase that to 9.
Okay.
Older bodies don't metabolize protein as well. But anyway, you know, you can eat a candy bar if you want. That's going to take up a lot of your carbs. It's also going to give you a sugar rush. And you're going to be hungry at the end of the day, and you won't have any more carb bubbles left over. So, but it's kind of a teaching tool, because early on, if you eat a, you know, boy, I want that donut. And you pay for it at the end of the day. And so the next time you say, well, maybe I'll have a quarter of a donut, because that's only going to be one protein and one fat. And it'll be a treat. And I'll still be able to eat a, you know, a meal, a full meal.
Yeah.
I try to, you know, I emphasize the carbs that are protein rich, like oatmeal for breakfast, brown rice instead of potatoes. Although I think potatoes have a little bit of protein too. So the protein, of course, is what, and the fat are what make you feel full.
Yeah.
But it becomes kind of second nature. So I do, at the end of the day, think, now, have I met my protein requirement? Or am I finished with my carbs? Am I finished with my fats? But just like unhealthy eating can be a habit, so can healthy eating. Now, this year, this last year, our financial budget has shifted so that we're not spending as much money on restaurants. We do take out every once in a while, but that's been able to shift more to organic fruit and veg.
Okay. I got you. Cause like, I completely agree with you about the whole diet. You know, I was a personal trainer for about 8 years and I always taught my clients, you know, it is a lifestyle, but it's more, it's your, you know, making healthy food choices. So like you said, you know, if I'm going to eat this donut for breakfast, you know, you have to take it into account over the whole day. It's not just that one point, but then, like you said, not restricting. I think that's huge, because all these diets, whether, you know, I won't say the actual names of them or whatnot, but that, like you said, they emphasize different types of, you know, macros, or cut this out, or this has to be before six, or this after eight, or whatever it is.
Right.
I've always found, for me, especially over the last couple of years, is doing, just trying to make it as simple as possible, because the whole thing with trying to create a routine, and with life anyways, I mean, you know how it goes. There's so many outside influences going on. So many things can impact us. So back to the whole idea about food choices, I found is trying to keep my sugar level kind of consistent throughout the day. Cause like you said, you know, if you eat that candy bar, you're going to have, it's going to spike and then you're going to crash. And so, and that obviously impacts how we feel. And I like your philosophy with that, is what I'm trying to say. I completely, we're totally on the same page. And I think that's awesome, because it is more about our choices, and it's not like, okay, this is bad, this is good. You know, it's not black or white. Like, you know, people, I find it interesting, because we live, you and I have bipolar disorder, which is this, you know, polarizing illness. And then in order to treat it, though, we have to find the gray area in between, because otherwise, you know, it's going too far one way or too far the other, it destabilizes, you know, our moods and so forth. So I just think that in terms of lifestyle, like you had mentioned at the very beginning, I think that's huge, because there's so many things that go in to our treatment, And if we, like I was saying, if we can make it easier, more user-friendly, and, you know, just saying like, okay, exercise, you know, I'm going to do some exercise. App to be keep up with it. And you know, those days where you're feeling like, oh man, I'm just not up to doing exercise. But if it's something you don't see it as just exercise, like is it something that you have to do, just if that makes sense. Because like for me, if I don't work out now, I feel it. I just don't feel good for the rest of the day.
Yeah, both exercise and diet. That's one of the interesting things about that. Is that once you get into a healthy lifestyle, you recognize how bad your body actually felt before. Yeah. You know, and sometimes
I do.
Sometimes that's my attitude toward, I love donuts, maple cake donuts.
Oh, but, man, yeah. I hear you.
But I have learned how sick I feel. And every once in a while, I do splurge with a dessert. And I take the attitude of, okay, this is just going to reinforce my good behavior because I know I'm going to pay the consequences.
Yeah.
And then I will be reminded why I don't eat that anymore. But, you know, and the other thing about I've lost my total train of thought. Let me say something about exercise. That's, people might just respond negatively to the word exercise like they do to diet, like diet.
Yeah.
It's so true. Die every day.
Oh my gosh.
Who wants to exercise just sounds like work. But it's important. I understand that weightlifting seems to give you a thrill.
Yeah, and, I love it.
And actually I like a little bit of it. I do the hand weights thing. But again, it helps if you can find a way to fit it into your life. Now, this has just worked so well for me and for a bunch of people. In my church, there is somebody who needs a lung transplant. And he's working with a program, a hospital, and is trying to get on their list. And several months ago, they said, okay, the thing is, to get a lung transplant, you have to satisfy all kinds of requirements. And one of them is you have to be pretty healthy, which is ironic.
Yeah.
He needs a lung transplant, right?
Yeah, right.
but they want to work with as healthy a base as they can. So they said, okay, you need to lose 10 pounds and you need to be able to walk. I can't remember what his goal was without assistance.
Okay.
So he started off on this program of walking more every day. And then we got the idea at our church, we're going to walk too. Now, this is all being done, you know, online. I mean, the walking isn't online, but our communication is all online. We don't walk next to each other. And we said, we're going to walk the distance from your house to UCLA and back. And then it's like, even though we're not walking literally beside Stan, we've always got Stan with us because we're praying for him and remembering him while we're walking. And we have a corporate goal. And so everybody, you know, who needed to do more walking was doing more walking.
Is doing it.
Now he's supposed to be working on his balance. And I have to say that's more of a challenge because I hate crunches.
Oh, yeah.
I told him, Dan, it's going to be a struggle, but for you, I'll do crunches. but to find a buddy, to find somebody that you're accountable to and that you're doing it with and that you're doing it for.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we go off, my wife and I go on a walk every afternoon, and she always thanks me for getting her out. And, you know, and then I thank her for needing me to get her out because I needed to get out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're accountable to each other that way. Exactly. Like, okay. Yeah. 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 You know, because the thing too, just real quick, you know, when I'm talking about, I know I say exercise, but it's just really just some sort of activity, you know, like with my son, it's funny that you say that about exercise, because now he sees that as a negative thing too. If you're like, okay, let's go outside and run around, he's like, oh yeah, let's do it, daddy. Exactly. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of, it's the connotation like of how you use it. And, what I was going to say too, is if you, like for me, I don't have a workout partner or workout buddy, but, what I do though, I have an app that I use that tracks my steps each day. And mm-hmm. so that helps me be accountable with my steps and being active that way. But since, you know, with the weightlifting, it's funny that, you know, when you first get into, for me, for weightlifting, when I was getting back into it, it was, I felt physically just exhausted, and for like a month or a month and a half. But then once my body, like we were talking about earlier, our bodies get into this routine of like, okay, I'm unhealthy, but now I'm getting healthy, and this is how it should feel. There's a little transition. And I think people sometimes, you know, before giving it a full out, what's the word, you know, a full out try, they mm-hmm. kind of will sometimes give up. But for me, once I found it, it's like, I have to do it every day now, like I said. And so with my activity of doing weightlifting and eating choices, it's like you said too, we need to have the right fuels for our body then to recover. And this all kind of plays together with rest, you know, sleep at night, you know, doing our activity level, our, you know, fueling our bodies with the right foods or the, you know, healthier foods. So I kind of lost my train of thought too. So
yeah. Here we are.
And we're back.
So, you know, people, hospitals that do lung transplants, they want them to work. And so and there aren't enough organ donors. Boy, if I don't know if you're an organ donor, but sign mm-hmm. up.
I am. I am.
You can save people's lives, and mm-hmm. somebody's going to save my friend's life, which is a tragedy, but it's a way to squeeze something good out of a tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
But the hospital's not going to put that lung into a body that it thinks is not strong enough to recover.
Mm-hmm.
Now, unfortunately, with bipolar or any mental illness, doctors will put pills into bodies that are not healthy. And mm-hmm. then both the doctor and the person who's taking the pill doesn't understand why you don't recover.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have the foundation. The mm-hmm. pills the pills help. And they're important, but without the foundation, they can't make up for mm-hmm. a wild and crazy lifestyle. They do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to mm-hmm. do what we have to do.
And it's like when we were first talking, and you spoke about our personal accountability. You know, I just had a discussion with somebody about, you know, taking their meds, and we see our, you know, I see my doctor once a month for maybe 15 mm-hmm. minutes, a check-in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now it's, I'm in a good spot right now because I've spent so many years trying to figure out the meds that would work with my body.
Right.
Because like you said, some of these meds, you know, they have such horrible side effect, negative side effects. And, but the thing that I found too over the years, and that you probably have too, is that you can give the same med to two different people and they'll have completely different results. Like,
right.
There's a class of medication that I can't take anymore because I gained so much weight that it just, my quality of life just goes down the tubes and then I can't function.
Right.
But then I have another, you know, I have a friend that's on this med, on this class of meds that I personally can't take, and they're able, they lose weight from it. So it's kind of, it's ironic, you know? So I just think that in terms of medication, you know, when I was diagnosed with bipolar type 1 back in 1999, and they basically just said, okay, we're going to find some meds and that's it. Nobody really spoke about, okay, well, what do we do in between? What's the, you know, like there's no education about, well, you know, how, like you said, like if you have this crazy lifestyle, it's, you're not going to get better by just taking these meds. You have to put in the work yourself. And that has to go, that goes with the routine and finding healthy habits that you can adopt that will help you. Cause it sounds like you said that you, you know, you have your faith, you're in with church and so forth. I think that people, you know, like for me personally, I used to have a really strong faith. My mom was a Christian Scientist, and then my dad was a hardcore Catholic. And I don't know if you know the different views, but I mean, they're like completely different. And so, you know, I still have hope. I still have faith. And I think that's one of the things that has helped me get by and, you know, go from day to day. You know, I mean, with you, you said, gosh darn it, now I keep losing my train of thought now too. It's just, you were talking about your faith. How long, you know, have you, you know, believed all your whole life, or kind of, could you touch on your journey with that and how it's kind of impacted your, with your diagnosis?
Sure.
Okay.
I was just flat out devoted to Jesus from a very, very, very early age. I was raised Roman Catholic. When I got to high school, started having some intellectual conflicts with that, and found the Episcopal Church in college. And the Episcopal Church, I guess, a couple of things. The fancy word that I like to use for it is epistemological humility. And what that means is we acknowledge that we don't know everything. So we have some values, God, the Holy Spirit, Jesus, we're trying to live the way Jesus would have us live. We find the sacraments to be something that really give value to life and that really feed us. We worship together. We don't pick at each other's thoughts very much. We allow a lot of intellectual freedom. We're also very science friendly. The Bible says that God gives gifts, healing gifts, to doctors, and the doctors are to be honored on account of those gifts. We believe that God created all of us, including our brains, and expect us to use it. And science is wonderful. It's an exploration. You know, Einstein just talked, I don't remember his quote, but he would talk about his exploration of the universe, and it filled him with awe. And science can do that. It's not a conflict with faith. It's a source of finding more things to believe about. So that's been a really good fit for me for all of my life. Now, I will say that my illness and some of those really, really dark suicidal times were very traumatic and really challenged me and made me feel betrayed. And that's a very painful experience. I think what's happened to my faith since then, the way I put it is, I don't know as much about God as I used to. And frankly, I think that's a maturing experience for anybody. As time goes by, one would hope that you become less certain of the things that we really don't have any evidence for, and just allow things to be. Through all of that, I'm really devoted to Jesus and doing my best to follow what we call the way of love. There's a lot about Christianity. I mean, there are voices, and they seem to speak the loudest, that don't understand Christianity to be a way of love. But I'll say they're wrong.
No, that's it. No, that's what we'll see. 'Cause the thing is, I actually this past week or two, I was approached by somebody up in Canada, and he's doing a study about the relationship between like spirituality and faith and bipolar disorder. 'Cause I know for me personally, when I get really manic, I have a lot of faith-based delusions and hallucinations and so forth. Like in 2016, I thought I was good buddies with the Pope, and I was ready to go out to Europe and go see him at the Vatican. And that was the delusion I had at that point. But I also have had hallucinations about, demons and the devil, and they always seem to be faith-based. And I've met, a handful of people that have, had something similar to that. And it opens up the study. It really opens up a conversation because, it's interesting to think, well, here I have this mental illness. It's bipolar disorder. And I used to have a really, really strong faith. How do you know the difference between what's spiritual and what's the mental illness? And I'm looking forward to seeing this study done and what his results are, because he's going to do a follow-up study too, based on, if you're, he said he's going to do a follow-up study. I don't know the whole everything, but about, if you believe before, or if you're an atheist before, and then you go through one of these episodes, like a manic episode where you have these delusions or hallucinations. So I know we kind of veered off towards, on this topic, but I just wanted to get your ideas, because I think too, finding hope in something, I think is so important, because that's what helped me as well, and I know it's helped you. And so I think that whether it's religion or whatever it is, I think people need to find something that they can find hope in.
Now, I always get a little uncomfortable when we start thinking of spirituality or religion as tools in our recovery toolbox, because I think those are broader categories.
Okay.
And, you know, as I understand God, God is not, if you've got a God who can be used, even for good things, if you've got a God who can be used, that's a little less than God. God, whatever that word refers to, is not something you can get a handle on. It's always going to be bigger than you. But part of what you're saying, part of being a human being is needing to have meaning in our lives. And to do something that's of value, or to be something that is of value, to have relationships that are of value. And the way we talk about it, you know, in my shop is call. What is God calling you to?
Okay.
Now, our understanding of that is that God is calling me to be fully who I am. And that I already am created in the image of God. And that is what I need to develop.
Okay.
And that is where my meaning is. So the particulars of my life circumstances are a piece of that, and have to be taken into account. For some people with bipolar, that means that whatever they find their calling to be, it has to include their bipolar. So for example, Kay Redfield Jameson, the, you know, the former director of the UCLA Mood Disorders Clinic at UCLA, the co-author of Manic Depressive Recurrent Depression Illness. I mean, it's the textbook. And she's just a brilliant, brilliant person. And when she came to terms with her bipolar, and she had a really extreme case of it, has a really extreme case of it, she said, I can't manage this and go to medical school. So instead, she got a PhD in psychology. You know, she took her limitations and she took her skills and she found a way to express her passion that managed both of them. So for me, that's turned into a mission in mental illness, mental health journalism. When the book was about a year ago, when we were doing the final things to get the book ready for publication and then the promotion since. Now, I work just part-time in this little church. It's what's called a mutual ministry church, which means that everybody is a minister. Everybody has a call. And as a priest, I'm not in charge of everything. In fact, as a priest, I'm not in charge of anything except what I do on Sunday morning. but I said, I need to pull back while I'm doing this. And there are other people, there are other clergy there, actually. But our worship team has some lay people and some clergy. And this is my ministry now, and I can contribute my part, which has gotten smaller there, Mm-hmm. I'm more of a mentor at this point, so that I can do this other thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's what gets me up in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, what gets me up in the morning is moving words around on paper, moving sentences around in paragraphs. I love to write.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome. Well, I'm wondering, just to kind of summarize what, you know, if you could kind of go over just one more time, the main ways that you manage.
Sure. Lifestyle is the biggest. Keeping to the routine, keeping good sleep, exercise, diet, stress management, not letting myself get overwhelmed. Let's see, there were four items on there. Education and self-awareness. The doctor does, as you said, does not give any education. I mean, I never got as much as a pamphlet. But learning as much as I can about how to make this work. Mm-hmm. Support system, my wife, my therapist, my colleagues, other people who are living with the same condition. They're huge. Mm-hmm. And then medication is largely, you know, is stable for me now and just handles the blips.
Mm-hmm. Do you take medication then on a regular basis daily, or do you have PRN meds or
both?
Okay.
I take some supplements that, you know, psychiatrists have recommended to me. I hate to go into specifics because, as you said, what
yeah,
caused you
don't
the
have
balloon.
To... Yeah. No, you don't have to go into. Yeah, you don't need to. Yeah, I just wanted to know.
Both. Okay. Both every day, and then I have some rescue meds.
Okay. I just want to make sure that people realize that, like, it's that you're taking into account all the different areas, the factors, because
like you, Willa,
my mission, my goal now, I actually. What I'm doing online, I'm in the process of turning into a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And my mission is to help empower everyone that has bipolar disorder and help them in the times that they're outside of the doctor's office, which is the vast majority
almost,
of it.
Almost all of
yeah,
their life.
Yeah, the entire, yeah. And so, you know, it's not going to be a crisis thing, but these are tools like what you're talking about are just instrumental. They're key. And I think what you're doing is awesome. You're doing awesome work. from what I'm trying to do too, we're like on the same page. And I love that because I think you and I going through our own journey and sharing it with others and sharing what works and helping people understand and find what works for them. They're going to be able to live a more fulfilling life we're at now. So,
yeah. There's one other thing that I guess wasn't on Sarah Russell's list, but that is a big piece of Prozac Monologues and a big piece of my next book. And the way I look at the world is humor.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, gravity kills, as they say. So stay away from the edge and also lighten up.
I love that.
So, you know, some people find that really disconcerting about my book because I will talk about my darkest times and then turn it.
And then what?
And then turn it with a one-liner that kind of breaks the spell.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know I'm going to read your book, especially now, because humor is big with me too, because I love humor. And you can ask my wife, we're always joking around. We're always laughing. We're always trying to find, because, you know, life is already too serious anyways, and then you bring in a mental illness like bipolar disorder or whatever it is, whatever mental illness it is, and if you can find a way to find a little bit of humor and bring it up, uplift it a little bit, I think, yeah, awesome.
Well, see, and the thing about humor is it's a way of framing your experience and a way of understanding what's going on that doesn't make it so deadly serious. It acknowledges that this terrible thing that is happening is not the only thing that is happening. There are other ways of looking at it, and there are ways of getting through it.
Mm-hmm. And real quick, with your, you said you're working on your second book. Could you tell us a little more? Give us a little peek, an idea?
Sure. Well, the first book, a lot of it was written when I was in Costa Rica, when I was on a one-week vacation, and had a hypomanic episode, and just, I spent my entire vacation writing a book. But I was able to go back to Costa Rica, and several times, and we have a little casita in this little tourist slash fishing town.
Oh, neat.
On the Pacific. So the next book is called Bar Tales of Costa Rica.
Bar Tales.
While I was doing other writing, you know, 4 o'clock would come every day, the workday is over, and I would go do research. Mm-hmm. And go hear the stories that people were talking about in bars. And then I'd come home and I'd scribble out a verbatim and put that in a file and save it. And so I'm turning that now into a book.
Oh, awesome. And do you have a time frame, or is it just kind of?
Oh, I've got, you know, at this point, I've got a whole bunch of, as I said, verbatims, just the real bare bones of these were the things that were said. So I'm now really just writing the first draft. If I could get this done in 2 years, that would be fabulous. I've discovered it takes a long time to get a book done.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Well, is there any last words that you'd like to share or leave with everybody listening?
Oh, gosh.
I should have prepared you instead of, yeah, nothing like putting you on the spot.
Words, right? It's, you know, go find out as much as you can about how to live with this thing. And then go do it, because bipolar is a really shitty diagnosis, and you don't want that diagnosis. But what's worse is when you have it and you're being treated for something else, or when you have it and you're not being treated at all. Mm-hmm. It's something that can be managed. It is a lot of work. It gets easier over time. It's worth the effort. How's that?
That's awesome. Thank you, Willa. Thank you for joining us.
Sure.
I appreciate it.
So you can find me online. I decided to keep it simple. My blog is prozacmonologues.com. My website is willagoodfellow.com. And my Twitter and Instagram handles are @willagoodfellow.
And I'll have those in the description from here too. So thank you so much.
Oh, John, I've been looking forward to this. I knew we were going to have a good time.
I know. I know. You're just so easy to talk to. And I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me. It means a lot. And I know a lot of other people are going to love it too.
Thank you.
Okay. If you found this podcast episode helpful in any way, please consider pledging financial support
to me and my mission of empowering those of us living with bipolar disorder. Your pledge allows me the ability to record these episodes and provide them to you. Thank you for your consideration.